The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Essence Magazine, July and August 2019 edition. Again, on the cover of this edition, we have Iman. So just stay tuned. We're going to get to her, to the cover. But there's a lot that we have in this edition since it's for 2 months. So last time that we talked, it looks like that we went over the issues of politics and some of the 2020 presidential roundup. And I believe that we stopped or we left off with Elizabeth Warren and gaining ground and, you know, being a progressive. So next, the next front runner that we have is Joe Biden. And he was Barack Obama's right-hand man. But is that enough? Biden was the 47th Vice President of the United States from 2009 to 2017, serving under President Barack Obama during a historic administration. Before that, he was in the U.S. Senate for 36 years, representing Delaware. Biden, age 76, has pursued the Democratic presidential nomination twice before. This time around, his platform includes empowering workers, improving education, providing access to affordable health care, pursuing pollution and climate change solutions, and following a humane approach to immigration. The former VP's campaign hasn't been without controversy. The one-time chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee has faced renewed criticism over how he handled the 1991 Clarence Thomas Supreme Court confirmation hearings, in which Anita Hill accused the now justice of sexual harassment. In addition, several women have come forward alleging that Biden's hugs and other physical contact made them uncomfortable. His response acknowledged the women's feelings, but the lack of a direct apology has troubled some in the Me Too era. Still, Biden has taken the lead over his Democratic rivals in various polls and may retain some luster from his years as President Obama's loyal wingman. Amy Glaupacher. Back in 2007, Amy, age 59, broke barriers as the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate from Minnesota. The former prosecutor is now taking her case for the presidency. Her priorities include revamping the nation's infrastructure and expanding mental health resources. In Congress, she supports the Green New Deal and the First Step Act, a federal criminal justice reform measure. For too long, leaders in Washington have sat on their sidelines while others try to figure out what to do about our changing economy and its impact on our lives, what to do about the disruptive nature of new technologies, income inequality, the political and geographic divides, the changing climate, the tumult in our world, she says on her campaign website. Seth Moulton. Moulton is age 40, is a Massachusetts congressman and an Iraq war veteran who says his presidential run is about patriotism and service. 9/11 happened months after Moulton's graduation from Harvard. After joining the Marines and serving in four combat deployments, Moulton returned to Harvard's business school on the GI Bill and later worked in the private sector. In 2014, the Democrat ran for Congress, beating the nine-term incumbent. His platform focuses on veterans' issues, jobs, affordable health care, climate change, foreign policy, and national security. Marianne Williamson. Williamson is a best-selling author, an activist, and an internationally known spiritual lecturer, whom many might recognize from her appearances on the Oprah talk shows. The native or the native Texan, age 67, is now a Democratic presidential hopeful. Her stump speeches cover love, peace, and policy issues that include reparations, child advocacy, education, the climate crisis, gun safety, immigration, ending mass incarceration, and food safety. I am now at the point where my deepest desire is to take what I've learned and express it in a way that best serves others, Williamson notes on her campaign website. Michael Bennett, the 54-year-old Senate from Colorado, was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2008. He has crafted an immigration reform bill in Congress and supported the Affordable Care Act and LGBTQ equality legislation. His platform tackles infrastructure, funding, climate change, immigration, national security, health care, and education. Bennett is a former superintendent of Denver Public Schools. The reformer, Cory Booker, cleaned up Newark. Can he do the same for the nation? Born in Washington, D.C., Booker, age 50, now hopes to inhabit the district's most prestigious residence, the White House. A graduate of Stanford University, a Rhodes Scholar, and a Yale-educated attorney, Booker moved into Newark public housing after law school. He later became mayor of the city before winning a special U.S. Senate election in 2013. In Congress, he's pushed for criminal justice reform, small business investment, apprenticeship programs, and anti-lynching legislation. Booker's presidential platform includes a sweeping gun violence prevention proposal, incorporating universal background checks, a ban on assault weapons, and taking on the NRA. Americans are being killed and families are being torn apart, said Booker in a press statement. We must do better. It is time for bold action. Kirsten Gillibrand. Gillibrand spent her formative years watching her grandmother and mother organize women and perform community service. Educated at Dartmouth College and the UCLA School of Law, the New York native was elected to the House of Representatives in 2006 and was appointed to the U.S. Senate in 2009. She has since been reelected twice. Now Gillibrand, age 52, has set her sights on the White House. Her platform includes affordable health care, gun control, strong public education, campaign finance, reform, and protecting rights of the LGBTQ community, people of color, and women. Jay Inslee. Inslee has been governor of Washington State since 2013. The 68-year-old lawyer aims to bring his Democratic vision tackling climate change, boosting working families, and spurring good-paying jobs to the White House. He served in Congress from 1993 to 1995 and again from 1999 to 2012 and voted against the Iraq War. Eric Swalwell. Swalwell, age 38, is an Iowa native who grew up in California and became the first in his family to earn a college degree. Following law school and work as a county prosecutor, he won a seat in the House of Representatives in 2012. Swalwell says that if elected, he will spend his first 100 days working with Congress on ending gun violence. His platform also includes universal health care and education reforms, including debt-free college and no-interest federal student loans. Andrew Yang, the son of Taiwanese immigrants. Yang, age 44, is a lawyer and tech entrepreneur from upstate New York. In 2011, he founded Venture for America, which places recent graduates in underserved communities to help businesses revitalize local economies. The Obama administration named him a White House champion of change in 2012. His presidential platform stresses Medicare for all, Human-Centered Capitalism and a Universal Basic Income Pledge. It would mean $1,000 a month for every adult in America over 18. Continuing on with issues, let's move on to education. Higher learning. Empowering youth through culturally responsive education. So on May 1st, 2019, the New York City Council asked a group of students called Teens Take Charge to weigh in on how to improve education for the city's 1.1 million public school students. One young activist, Sukaharadira Nadaye, and hopefully I'm pronouncing his or her name correctly, gave compelling testimony about the responsibility of educators and policymakers. I've heard a lot of adults say how much they love hearing student voices, but how much they value us, she said. I agree. Student voices are great, but you know what? I prefer adult action. With the comment, Nadia connected herself to legends of Black education activists, from Elizabeth Eckford, Anna Julia Cooper, and Ruby Bridges to modern day students, parents, and educators who have called their school system to task for mass racial inequities. The history of education in this country has always included barriers to Black children. In the early 19th century, states in the newly formed nation forbade the teaching of reading to enslaved peoples for fear that literacy would lead to insurrection. After the Civil War and Reconstruction, Jim Crow laws instituted segregation between Blacks and whites, including within what were then known as common schools. It stepped up their efforts on the policy of separating the races by using pseudoscientific IQ tests to argue that Black people were intellectually inferior to whites. The mid-20th century saw a victory for educational equity in the form of Brown versus Board of Education, which ruled the segregation of schools to be unconstitutional, and the so-called separate but equal educational facilities for whites and Blacks to be inherently unequal in quality. But while it would take more than a decade for many schools actually to be desegregated, especially across the South, in an unfortunate result as the mass exodus of white students from public schools to independent private schools and the monumental decimation of the teaching profession. Education policymakers and supervisors displaced or fired nearly 34,000 Black educators in newly desegregated schools while making space for their white colleagues. By the 1980s, desegregation efforts began to wane, with Presidents Reagan, Bush, and Clinton favoring an academic rigor and accountability narrative. This ultimately led to a sweeping reinterpretation of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 in the form of two policy initiatives known as the No Child Left Behind Act and Race to the Top. As a result of desegregation, many Black communities lost control of the curricula and staffing of the schools they claimed as their own, while the more recent slate of reforms felt like experimentation on children who were our most vulnerable and disenfranchised. Black faculty and students have for so long been asked to do the most with the least, and often they manage to make a way out of no way. My personal history is one in which my grandmother, a brilliant woman who did not finish high school, sent 12 children to college, says Imani Perry, PhD, the Hughes Rogers Professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. Her resourcefulness and intellectual curiosity, notwithstanding the limited opportunities afforded to a black woman born in the rural segregated South have sustained my own sense of responsibility and possibility in teaching and learning. We have this remarkable legacy of treating knowledge as a community endeavor, something to be cherished and shared. I claim that tradition proudly. Rapper and activist Killer Mike recently visited his former teacher, Miss Rivers, who he says encouraged his love for the arts and prompted him to become the rapper he is today. I've had the good fortune of growing up in the Atlanta public school system, he says. My high school was named for an African American educator and emancipator. The principal, the vice principal, all the teachers and the administrators were African American. So I felt a deep sense of purpose. I did not want Miss Rivers to ever see me on television as a lawbreaker or someone who appeared uneducated. I wanted to make these people proud because I knew their sacrifice. Simply by going to Frederick Douglass High School and being forced to read the autobiography of Frederick Douglass, I understood the sacrifice that had been made for me to be here. This sense of sacrifice is part of a long legacy of cultural and generational struggle and progress. Throughout history, you see parents who have sued school districts for equal funding and opportunity for their children, says Nicole Hannah Jones, a New York Times Magazine reporter. You're seeing parents leading protest movements against school systems for the unequal treatment of school children. It's been a constant battle for black parents and communities to try to achieve some semblance of a quality education for our kids. Yet many myths and stereotypes are still attached to our youth in a way that solidifies racist notions. The biggest myth is that the poor quality of education that black kids receive is because they don't want better, says Hannah Jones. The myth that black kids just don't care about education has been a tool that has been used since black people were denied the right to read. It is probably the most pervasive myth in that many black people even hold the views of ourselves. To Hannah Jones' point, it often seems that our current efforts to level the playing field of achievement for our children begin with an acceptance of this racist argument, when in fact the idea warrants more critical inspection. Kamika Royal, PhD, assistant professor at Loyola University, implores us to disregard achievement gap as a core tenet of black education. She writes in Good Magazine, the thinking that undergirds the achievement gap only speaks of academic outcomes, not the conditions that led to those outcomes. The most persistent myth about black children is that they don't value learning or education, says Perry. It is so damaging because it's an excuse for not teaching black children. The truth is, intellectual curiosity is the nature state of all children. So something cruel has to happen for children to be turned off to learning or school. There's lots of social science research that shows that black kids and families value education, but people hold on to that myth despite the research. Fortunately, we can point to reminders of black excellence beyond this false narrative. Events like Beyoncé's homecoming performance at Coachella 2018. Beychella, for those in the know, showcased cultural elements from historically black colleges and universities. And the news is filled with accounts of black children who have received multiple offers to elite institutions. Social media has created an annual tradition of black graduates sharing their stories of adaptability and perseverance. And those are retweeted and liked by thousands. Meanwhile, education activist groups such as the Baltimore Algebra Project and Maryland and Black Youth Project in Chicago are leading the latest movement for black liberation while dissecting the learning conditions of our vulnerable youth. But what does culturally responsive teaching look like? It looks like teachers encouraging students to help one another complete missing assignments, and cheer one another on when it seems like everyone else within the system doesn't have time or appears to have given up, says Julia Torres, a librarian and veteran English teacher in Colorado. It looks like children who have been labeled reluctant readers flooding the library by the hundreds to listen to book talks, to meet authors virtually, and to recommend diverse books for their classmates that they may have been considered in the months before or may not have been considered in the months before. The goal is to extend efforts like these beyond a few classrooms to communities across the entire nation. The idea is that Black teaching must encompass a better understanding of students' aspirations. Scholars such as Lisa Delpit, Geneva Gay, and Gloria Land or Latson Billings have asked educators to reform their practices for our children. Their works have shown the benefits of Black teachers as a resource toward equity. According to a report by researchers Melanie Acosta, Michelle Foster, and Deidre Holchin, African Americans cultivated a sophisticated system of developing and supporting systems or numbers of African American teachers. However, U.S. social political tactics has suppressed this method and obscured the potential of this approach to effectively respond to temporary issues in teacher education. Practitioners who believe in the principles of academic excellence for Black children are only the latest generation steeped in these traditions. The 2016 National Teacher of the Year and now Congresswoman Jahana Hayes and the 2019 National Teacher of the Year Rodney Robinson both used their platforms to discuss the alchemy happening in classrooms among students who are larger or our larger society often dismisses and discards. What Black folks have done is to make extraordinary efforts to ensure that their kids were receiving a quality education where a quality education is possible, observes Hannah Jones. There's a long tradition of Black educators who haven't refused to teach in schools that have been labeled as failing because they understand how important it is to have strong educators in those schools, even though it often ends up being a punitive experience for them. It's also important to recognize the daily efforts of our students, parents, and educators to learn independently. I wish more people would let go of the notion that young people don't know what or how to learn without adults, says Torres. We live in an age when information is more readily available than ever. I can get a basic level of knowledge about anything in seconds using multiple devices. We no longer live in the time when adults and wise elders are or need to be the keepers of all knowledge. It is that space between fear and exploration that the seeds of our mutual empowerment and liberation are planted. Despite social and economic stratification, high unemployment rates, food deserts, state takeovers, and privatization of our schools, not to mention the school-to-prison pipeline and the prevailing myths about our children, Black students still come to school with the intent to learn. When you take kids who would easily get labeled disruptive or hyper and you give them leadership positions, what you're really doing is giving those young people responsibility over their own education, and you're going to get a far better response, says Killer Mike. I believe that you can't organize on behalf of the people if the people you're organizing for aren't part of the organization. Many students have stories that would astonish my colleagues. They come into our spaces with ardor and make even the barest of classrooms come alive. They lay their wisdom and creativity on our desk in ways we can't plan for and regularly defy society's expectations. So often people seem to measure educational equity in terms of scores or placement or statistically measurable outcomes, says Perry. Those things are important to track, But for me, equity would mean that all children would be educated in a manner that will allow them to pursue whatever professional course they desire. The idea of inherent ability has become the handmaiden of inequity. We use it as an excuse for injustice. I want us to take seriously the goal of educating all children. With millions of children like Sukar Kadira Nadia, who expresses a desire to learn, we must ensure that our schools meet the challenge. So on to wealth, business, the innovation game. And this actually is, let's actually go to another article because this is a fairly long article and we don't have that much time. Looks like that we're running out of time for today's episode. So let's go to Still Becoming. Or better yet, what about some of the things that we learned from Essence? Essence Festival, their survival kit. So stay ready for all the action with the stylish, travel-friendly must-haves. And as we know that Essence has already taken place, and with so much happening in the New Orleans during Essence Fest, it's hard to know exactly what most people need, what are the best weekends of your life. But Essence has come up with some of like the best things that are needed for Essence Festivals, period. Number one, party on the go, master and dynamic. It's a wireless over-ear headphones. And that's priced at $449 at masterdynamic.com. Number two, that's capture incredible memories. And it's a OLO clip. It's a super wide plus telephotic pro lens kit, and it's priced at $250 at oloclip.com. And number three, get to the heart of the city. So these are guides by Lonely Planet app, and that's free on Google Play. And then number four, pack your essentials, away the carry-on. So aluminum edition suitcase, which is priced at $475, and that's at awaytravel.com. And then number five, this is where you keep your survival kit within reach. Mansur Gavril Calf Backpack, and that's priced at $9.95, and that's mansurgavril.com. And then finally, number six, Stay Charged by Anchor. It's a Power Core 2100 portable power bank, and that's priced at $56 at anchor.com. And again, we've run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. So be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. This podcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time. Thank you.